Spectrum Business works with small businesses nationwide, so we know that running your own business means doing it all. Marketing, sales, inventory, customer service, and more. Spectrum One for Business helps you keep it all connected for just $49.99 a month. Get fast, reliable internet, advanced Wi-Fi with Security Shield, and a free mobile line for one low price. Stay connected and do it all with Spectrum One for Business. Only $49.99 a month. Go to spectrum.com/business to learn more. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
What does Colgate mean by live life to the brightest? Could it be a rich glass of red sipped inside a Parisian cafe on a snowy night when my gaze is met by a tall, mysterious... I mean, brushing is directed with Colgate Optic White Pro Series Toothpaste gives you a visibly whiter smile in just 3 days, so you can live life to the brightest and finish that glass without worrying about teeth stains. Colgate Optic White. Find it at all major retailers.
Let's go!
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Binchtown TV. This is Brian here with Luke, Kathleen, and Kyle. Today we're going to be covering Season 7, Episode 4 of the CW show, The 100, entitled Hesperides. It was a pretty good one. Plot advanced on both Alpha and Beta, and that's how we're looking to split this dialogue up today, right? Alpha and Beta,
exactly.
Two different storylines.
Yeah, we're going
to
go through the whole Beta plot first, and then we're going to tie that into Alpha, because at the very end of the episode, we get a nice little tie-in that kind of makes sense for us to cover Hope, Echo, and Gabriel's storyline first.
Yeah, I'm sticking with what I've said before, and I think the boys agree the Beta storyline is way more interesting. I mean, we're spending all of our time there, and I said it to Kyle before this, that I can't believe that in the 7th season, I am so excited for all these characters I've barely known.
Yeah, like, that's a good point. And we even said, just watching it, like... doesn't even feel like Clark's show anymore.
No, it really doesn't. I mean, I think we'll get there, and there is 16 seasons, luckily, but it is a very interesting choice on Jason's part to just kind of not make it Eliza Taylor's show anymore.
To me, it felt even weirder that we spent part of this episode on Alpha, and we didn't even get a mention or a sight of Shade Hada, and it honestly didn't even feel wrong that it happened the way it did, which is... there's just a lot going on in a lot of different places around the small, you know.
That's almost similar to, like, when we talked, I guess episode one recap, when it was like, Bellamy's not in it, but, like, do we really...
we miss him?
Care
right?
so
it
much,
feels
yeah.
Orga- like,
love
it's written,
Bellamy,
yeah.
but, yeah, it's like, he's not
it
in the episodes, right. and it's kind of like, I'm not really thinking too much about it.
I'm starting to miss Bellamy. I think this is the first time when they were doing, like, the intro and they were showing the actors' names. This is the first time I noticed Bob Morley. Have they been doing that with every episode, still including him in the...
Yeah, they include. He's second.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is the first time I noticed it, and I was just like, is he going to be in this episode? But he wasn't.
You know-
also, definitely the first time I noticed... the legend Chad Rook's name on the opening scene.
Oh yeah.
Love to see it. We love Regular. Chad Rook, friend of the pod. Yeah, and I think we don't miss Bellamy because we're not in Sanctum with Clark and Raven and them so much, and I think that's why we don't miss Bellamy.
You
so
know
much.
Who misses Bellamy?
Tell us.
Echo.
She really does.
Yeah.
She's wilding out for Bellamy.
She doesn't know what she's going to do if she loses him. Anyway, so let's just jump right in. So we get this open with Baby Hope and a hot boy Dev. And it is just so, like, a cold open of this sad song, and I'm watching this, and this doesn't feel like The 100 at all, and I am so in on it. Like, it's so surprising how in on it I am. So, we get this montage, we see Hope alone for a little bit, we don't know exactly how much time, could be a few days, could be weeks, but I'm leaning towards more a few days. Dev shows up, of course, she doesn't really want anything to do with them, but then they slowly come together, and that's when we learned in a previous episode where that Dev has taught her how to fight and everything. So you see the knife throwing, and he trains her to be what level do we think Hope was faking to be?
We later find out that Dev himself was a level 7,
yes.
So there's no way that they would even attempt to fake her being anything higher than that.
Theoretically, he couldn't give her any knowledge to that would successfully make her be an 8 or above.
Exactly. So, I mean, we get 5-6 minutes with Dev, I'm already in love with him.
Worth
I'm like,
it, yeah.
And I said this before too. I'm like, Hope knows about 5 people really well, and they all end up dead or something else. But the plan is Dev's gonna attack first, and then Hope should follow. But she hesitates, and unfortunately, he dies. So that's how Dev dies. We know his bones are in playing chess with Orlando at this point.
When they're describing the plan, we also find out for the first time that the anomaly, or the bridge as they call it, is only open for 5 minutes once it's opened.
Yeah.
Which until we it's used, I guess, is what we have to assume, because minutes is a long time, and we've definitely seen it, you know, in and out quicker than that. But we just have to assume it's like a portal or door that will be open for 5 minutes.
That's a good point. And I assume, like, when we were watching, we were like, why 5 minutes? That seems like a long time. But I guess if something goes wrong.
And I guess we'll get to it a little later, but we do find out that there's a manual shutdown.
Yeah.
Before we leave the dev point, though, I think that little montage, while it only took up a couple minutes of the actual episode, it was done really well. I thought there's nothing unlikable about dev, because the only experience we have with prisoners from Bardo is Orlando before this episode. And he was just crazy. He broke our iPad. We fucking hated him. We thought he was like the worst, just a psycho that was just obsessed with the disciples and their master Anders. But yeah, so Dev was clearly different, and we do find out later that Orlando's a higher level, so maybe that has some correlation there. But I thought the Dev storyline was good. It was satisfying. Yeah. He was a cool guy. He helped Hope with her character development and actually trained her to be fighting level. You know,
great hair, too.
Great hairdo.
Great.
Looked a little bit like Murphy.
He did look a little bit like Murphy. Yeah.
Just love that.
No wonder I have a big crush on him.
That was a nice touch.
Yeah. So, we good on the dev stuff?
Yeah, man. RIP.
Okay.
Yeah.
So now we're still on beta, and we're going to pivot to Echo, Gabriel, and Hope. And Hope is smart enough. So it's right after he breaks the iPad, and Hope is smart enough to realize, okay, we have to turn him. Like, that is number one priority. And they have however long he has until his absolution day, which we learn is what they call it when they go back to Bardo after their
sentence. Let's not skip over the fact that when we enter the scene, Gabriel's beating the crap out of the dude.
Yeah,
he's still a little pissed about his iPad. Yeah.
Of course. This is also, I mean, a good group of people that will readily agree, like, all right, we have 5 years. Because I don't think, like, do you think Clark would just sit around for 5 years? Like, I feel like Clark would have the similar Octavia reaction of, like, we had to do whatever possible to get the hell off of this place.
Echo initially had that reaction. Yeah. I think the only thing that stopped her from going crazy and doing exactly what Octavia did was the fact that Hope had the living experience of 10, 20 years on the planet. So without Hope, I think all bets would have been off the table. Yeah. Anyone from one crew, you know, would have been crazy going off. They're not waiting 5 years.
Hope's a little bit like their rock.
Yeah, exactly.
And also Gabriel's just unfazed by almost everything.
So we get a line here that kind of illustrates what their tentative plan is. Hope says, quote unquote, 5 years to train for a jump into the middle of a fortress guarded by thousands of highly trained soldiers to rescue the people we love, meaning Bellamy, Octavia, and Dioza. That is... Those are heavy words for what they're walking into in Bardo. Mm-hmm. That is thousands with an S at the end. So there are multiple thousands of highly trained fighters there.
And that gives us our magnitude difference between the people on Alpha versus the advanced people on Bardo. So we do know that if they were to go to war, barring like a huge tech change or something, like that Bardo's very outclassing of Alpha.
After kind of learning the numbers difference even, and when you gauge that they are clearly more technologically advanced with the invisibility suits and their guns, which are pretty high powered weaponry, I think like the radiation shield is really the only thing that Sanctum has a leg up on. I don't know if Bardo's going to be able to do anything about that, but
do you think that thousands number kind of makes you think it's not just Allegis 3 people there? Because if it's just one ship full of Allegis 3, say it's 300 people is what they had, give it 100 years, I guess you could get a couple thousand.
We can't even begin to guess how many years the people, of Bardo are from the Allegis 3 mission, the time dilation thing makes it impossible to kind of know how many generations would have been there to repopulate the place. So right now it would just be guesswork.
Yeah, that's a lot of math.
Yeah, I guess, but to me it's like same as Sanctum.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Stop me if this train of thought is wrong, but if Bardo is on the same timeline as Sanctum, wasn't it like Russell the Sixth and Priya the Sixth? Like, weren't they on six generations of Prime, given they don't all die of old age? But
that is the reason why I think I brought up when we talked about this in the first episode, that I don't think that the people on Bardo are going to be directly from the Allegis 3 mission. Because that was the conundrum I was coming to. I was like, why wouldn't the people of Alpha had access to the same resources by this point, because they both lived hundreds of years, you know, the same timeline. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, also, it seems that the people from Bardo look negatively on Alpha, because Orlando makes a comment like, why would I want to be on Alpha with like the toxic gas, like the radiation sun, like things like that.
No, he actually made it seem like he had no idea they even existed. I think he knows about the existence, but not much about the culture at all. Everything he knows, he learned in the past 5 years or four and change with Echo, Gabriel, and Hope. But yeah, so then we'll pivot and go into, so now Echo, Gabriel, and Hope are planning on luring him in, so they're going to act like a family, because that's what he's lacking on this planet anyway. So we kind of get them gardening, they're like hanging out. It's the beginning of like a really good bonding of the entire episode.
Yeah, and then we get a nice little Monty callback when Echo is spreading out the powdered jellyfish, and then she makes a comment that it's better than Monty's algae, and then she gracefully looks to the sky and apologizes to the legend Monty. So that was a nice little callback for us.
Respect the writers constantly. Yeah. Give Monty. Like,
I love it.
It's so good.
Monty. He was the heart of the show. He wants them to do better, so they have to keep bringing it up. Because at the core, the 100 just wants to do better, but every season they fuck up an entire
planet. Well, he says, like, be the good guys, and then Echo kind of.
These three playing house on beta is kind of taking me back to the group of six people that had to spend several years up in the Ark.
Space crew.
It's honestly crazy that we're getting more of these three hanging out on beta than we did ever any flashbacks of them in space.
I wish we got those flashbacks.
Me too.
But I guess they weren't really up to anything. They were just kind of living. That was probably the most peaceful several years of each of their respective lives.
It's also pretty cool that like they still, even after the time skips, I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit, but even after the time skip, you could see that Echo still puts that relationship she has with Bellamy, who she hasn't seen in 6 years, whatever it's been for her, that's still like at the core and matters more than the most recent 5 years. And it's just cool to see like the power of the relationships established for the seasons we're seeing is just stronger than all these time skips would let you to believe, you know?
So where we're at is, and Echo says it when she walks out, when Gabriel scares Orlando away, she says 3 months and you scared him away, whatever it is. So then they decide they're going to lure him in with Hope because we see that he really, really cares about Hope and we don't know why.
Yeah, we talked about this for a while before recording. It was like we couldn't figure out what is his distinct attachment to Hope.
Because he was calling the doll Hope.
Yeah, everything. And then he even says after the... I mean, we'll get to it about the lake, but he, like, was way willing to protect her more than just because he, like, knows her name, because it might have been scribbled on, like, under the table in the cabin.
I think the first key part of this is we don't know how long Orlando's been on Planet Beta, and the only way I can rationalize this, his mindset in the beginning when he's freaking out, like, and going crazy over this Hope dead doll and stuff, is that he's probably 15 years, 10 years into a sentence of having just lived on that planet by himself and just kind of slowly going crazy. That's really the only way I can rationalize why he was so weird in the first episode we saw him, but he was so collected and, you know, thoughtful after they gave him some time to establish the connection with the group.
Yeah. I didn't even think about that. He was pretty, like, rugged when they first
met
him,
feral.
Too. So he was feral.
Yeah,
that's the word for it. I didn't even think about it like that. So that's a good point. I think that's a good assumption. Yeah.
And they make it so tough because it's like, when did he first get there? Like, at what point after Hope left with the dev plan? And then Hope, does she ever come back? And then she goes to Alpha. And is it during her time on Alpha originally? Is that when he begins his sentence there?
I don't think Hope ever went back to Beta, because we know that she did go to Bardo eventually. And when Gabriel put in Hope's bio code on Alpha, it pulled her there. So there's no story-wise need for her to go back to Beta. So she probably never went there. And again, because of the time differences, it doesn't really matter when Orlando was put there. It could have been like, you know, a day or two after in Bardo and Alpha time, but
it's insane. Yeah. It's hard to keep it together,
but
so after Orlando goes in and saves Hope from the lake, they put on this act for him, which eventually ends in them saying, yeah, we want to get to Bardo, but they'll probably just kill us if we pop out when when they come to rescue you, like, and Hope flashes the eyelashes, says, I don't want to die. He said, I won't let that happen. So Orlando gets on board with our squad.
It's a little bit premature to say that because the on board doesn't happen until the fighting scene, right? When he when
that's fair. Yeah.
Well, he sees through the act at the end. He makes the Navy SEAL comment.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Which is a perfect line. Yeah.
Well, that was an interesting scene too because we find out that Hope never knew about Dioza's mean streak, which.
But Luke made a great comment during that scene or Kyle, I can't remember who said it, but I was like, wow. You would think Hope would react worse to the word terrorist. And then Luke said, well, does she even know what a terrorist is? I mean, right. She's been alone.
Yeah. And that goes back to your point. She only knows five people.
Exactly.
And two of those people who she lived with when she was young, who taught her life, you know, besides fighting, probably never brought that
up. Yeah. Honestly, I thought they divulged way too much information at that table. I was like, why are they talking so much?
And Gabriel knew that Hope was there for 20 years. Like, and he just kind of casually just threw that around, like calling her mom a terrorist and stuff. It did feel weird a little bit.
Well, you would think that if it was just Octavia Dioza and Hope, maybe Gabriel was working under the assumption that Hope just knew these things about her mom, but at the same time, he probably didn't put together that she was only 10 when Dioza and Octavia got abducted. So, and you wouldn't have that conversation with your 10-year-old kid.
Yeah.
So I think it was just nobody really knew what was going on with each other. We don't even know what's going on with these people. So,
Aside of it,
I mean, this is just not tinfoil hatty, but just kind of making, you know, a logical assumption under what Gabriel would think. Maybe he thinks that Orlando, because obviously they have a negative view, Bardo has a negative view of Dioza, that maybe Orlando is on the train of line of thinking that Dioza is a terrorist. And then saying, like, you know, basically being like he's on his side, on his opinion of Dioza.
And that can kind of be supported a little bit as maybe the Bardo people are descendants of Allegis because as the Alpha Squad is, you know, Russell Prime is a descendant, they knew about Dioza being a terrorist. So if the people of Bardo are there, then they'll have that history on their planet. So you're right. I mean, that could tie in a little bit to them actually.
That's making a decent amount of assumptions.
Of course.
Gabriel is the smartest man on the planet, so.
Boy, is he.
Well, I guess there's only four people on that
only
planet.
Only four people on the planet.
He's the smartest smartest person in the show at this point, basically.
We love that hot boy, that hot, smart boy.
So as we continue the conversation at the dinner table where they're eating the jellyfish etouffee, we find out a little bit about the disciples' culture. It's revealed that the tattoos on Orlando's faces are markings that signify that he is level 12. We also find out that Dev was level 7 at the time that he was sent to Beta, to serve his sentence. So what we're thinking, guys, is that there's kind of a progression of training amongst the disciples, and we find out from context clues that Orlando was pretty high up in that training by being a level 12.
Yeah, because Hope says that's I forget the quote itself is like that's
he's badass. We need to know everything.
That's like
top
level.
Hardcore,
he has classified
hardcore. Yeah,
yeah. So he's gonna be a guy that knows pretty much. He'll be able to assist them in their breakout plan for Bellamy, Dioza, and Octavia because of his information, like, very well.
He also, I mean, is, like, a trainer. I mean, he's, like, such a high level that he trains lower levels to obtain higher levels because he, they make mention that he's trained people. He gets the title master at the end, so he seems to be a well-known person.
Right.
And obviously has a very important position within being, obviously, 12th level, but also being training people is obviously a very important position.
Yeah, the people that come to retrieve him towards the end of the episode do refer to him as Master Orlando. So yeah, he's really well to see received even amongst the disciples.
Which I did not see coming. This was a lot of development for Orlando in one episode.
I like him now. He was great.
My notes in the beginning of the episode just refer to him as Crazy Guy, not Orlando.
Yeah,
and then we hear that his name's Orlando, and we get a little bit of a character development there.
Kind
of
like Hatch when we were like, he's the criminal leader guy.
Chad, we love you.
And it takes one episode, and you're like, holy shit, I love this guy.
And
he cleaned up a little bit. He got his eyebrows done, like you said.
He did.
Yeah. We also learn why Orlando got punished. So Orlando broke Shepherd's Law number 4, which he says is honor the day of rest to be efficient the rest of the week. He chose not to rest and was punished for it. So the disciples are pretty strict, as it appears, if he just chose not to rest.
Couple of narcs.
Yeah.
And this is the conversation we get this information from Gabriel basically giving him his vegetables, right? Is that this conversation that we learned this, or is this before?
I believe that happens later, actually. This is at the dinner table.
Yeah, the dinner table. He pulls out the shepherd's rule number 4.
Oh, is that where? Okay.
I wonder. It just seems like a crazy punishment.
Yeah. Gabriel calls it out.
But I'm just thinking, do you think that people at higher levels are held to higher standards, or that it's like one of the base 5 to 10 rules, and these are like unbreakable rules?
Well, this is number 4.
I think it directly mirrors
the ARC rules. Anything you do is, no matter how petty the crime is, you're floated.
That's a good point.
I think that's the equivalent. I
haven't heard that in a while.
I know, right?
Well, and it's also so easy for them to punish people like that because they have this planet where it doesn't affect their everyday lives at all, but it makes them waste 20 years of their life.
That's fucking insane.
I think they describe it as this, well, it is later on, but we also find out that the disciples refer to Beta as Penance.
Mm-hmm. That's later on. We do find that out from the fake Anders, the bald guy.
The fake Anders, I love it. But anyway, so at the end of the dinner table scene, Orlando has a good quote saying, "Too bad your Navy SEAL mom didn't teach you how to swim." And that's when he kind of gets a little bit upset because he sees through the act completely that Hope was just lying to
him. They were using that dinner, you know, fake family scene to try and get as much information out of him. And he, again, we find out, he's a little bit of a badass. He knows his shit. Like, that stuff's not going
to
fly for him.
Yeah, he starts to get a little bit of a swagger back after that line.
Yeah, I don't know about fake family, though, because they start really loving, like, the scene where, they start fighting each other and they're training themselves, and Orlando eventually comes to them, but Echo tries to fight him, and it's like the funniest thing because she obviously loses. They bet the cabin, and then the scene where they're sleeping under the stars is so cute. I'm like, they love each other. They're family now.
You spend years with these people, just you and them. I mean, what else are you gonna do, you know? And they accept, once Orlando's on board, they just accept him like that too, which makes the eventual betrayal that much worse. But, you know, we'll get to that too.
Abiko has a nice little line when Hope is throwing the jellyfish powder into the fire, and she's like, "Hey, like, be careful, that stuff's dangerous."
Yeah,
just like,
right?
Very not Echo like.
I know, and Hope's like, "Good night, Echo. Good night, Gabriel." Yeah. I'm like, "Good night,
Hope." Beta softened you, man. We saw Octavia go from eating humans and slaying bitches to fucking
mom.
That's a good Annie point. O, yeah.
So when they're sleeping outside by the campfire is the first time they mention memory capture.
Yes, it is indeed.
Want to explain that a little bit?
Sure. So they call it MCAP. And it's the memory capture, and Hope mentions it's not torture unless you fight it, which she says both Dioza and Antio did.
What else are they going to do?
So we're just assuming that it can pull any of your memories.
And this also gives us an explanation to why when Octavia and Dioza were getting originally separated from Hope, that the people from Barter, the disciples, were like, put the helmets on them, we got to preserve their memories. So I think what that's telling us is you need your memories. If you forget your memories, this MCAP machine won't work. So I think that was part of the reason they wanted to preserve their memories, and same with Bellamy's in episode 1.
So powerful. It's like ridiculous how they can do that. They can pull your memories out. They just like send you for a weekend, but it's 20 years on a planet. Like the Bardo people, the disciples are fucking crazy.
They think to power their technology.
Yeah, true.
I mean,
yeah.
We don't know. We are learning more and more about them, but it's honestly like, the more we learn, the more it's like, how could we possibly beat them?
Yeah, and how could we possibly like them? I can't imagine, like, there has to be a character that's, like, on the inside or, like, starts to question the philosophy of the society.
There's going to need to be some sort of leverage that our
team
gets.
We know there's a character on the inside because Hope had the note in her arm. True. She literally described him as my man on the inside.
Yes, you're right.
And I thought it was Dev somehow, but I'm pretty convinced,
Could it be the person that at the very end of the episode that takes Gaia into the port that was the fake?
I'm going to say something right now. It's Orlando. He's not dead. We didn't see him die on camera. He ain't dead.
I would love every
little
bit of that.
They were acting like they didn't know each other?
Oh, wait, that happened prior to it.
Yeah,
shit.
I mean, like, unless Hope's a great
But I still stick with Orlando's
actress.
Alive. I was wrong, but yeah, I think Orlando is alive.
I really liked Orlando once he got his sanity back. He, you know, he's just one of those
Sensei,
characters.
Man. He, like, that fight scene alone was just so cool. Am I jumping ahead?
You're good.
No, we talked about that already.
So when Echo even just challenged, Echo's a good fighter herself. She's Ice Nation, not the Ice Nation. Yeah. She is Ice fucking
Loved
nation.
Loved that line, too.
Yeah, and, you know, like, she's a renowned fighter. We've seen her kick ass. Doesn't matter who you are. And she just gets whooped by Orlando with
he,
him
like,
barely even
the
trying.
He, straight right and, like, hits her with, like, the uppercut under both of their arms. And I was like, ooh.
A little, like, jiu-jitsu flip. I don't know, man. He's
level 12.
He seems
12.
Like an old guy,
just
too.
Those out.
Hope's like, Antio would have loved seeing you get your ass kicked. You just picture Octavia shit-talking Echo the entire time.
I love that about Hope, that she has like taken on like a little bit of like that part, that specific part of Octavia's personality.
It makes her binge crew. It makes her like she is part, she might as well be part of the 100, because she's like, she knows all the stories. She's like a young Maddie, like we said
before.
But
I just, you can say the same thing about Jordan, but I don't accept.
Yeah, we don't accept. We'll get to that later.
Yeah.
The Jordan hate is real.
Yeah.
So
really
anyway,
is.
after the campfire scene is the scene that you were referencing, where because Orlando's staying in the cabin that they just wagered, and Gabriel comes to him with a basket full of veggies and says, "Hey, you're scrawny, like you're pale. I'm pretty sure you're going through ketosis. Eat these vegetables." And they kind of have this exchange wherein I think Gabriel engages him and tries to get a little bit more out of him about who is the shepherd. Orlando takes offense to it a little bit, and Gabriel says, "Hey, listen, man, I know a thing or two about people worshiping false gods." And I was like, yeah, you do.
That whole thing is great when he's saying, like, gods wouldn't condone it. Like, men condone this. I was like, yes.
That was the best speech of the entire episode. It was so well written. And just the way, the callbacks to even the false gods of the episode name, you know, just referring to Russell and all the primes and how he stands against all of that. It was just a really, really cool and well written scene. And then he starts, like, comparing the disciple, the disciple lifestyle to religion. And it just kind of, there's so many parallels that we can see, and it was just such a good speech.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but Gabriel name drops Eligius, and Orlando doesn't seem completely in the dark about that. Do you guys remember that at all?
I don't remember enough to correct you.
Well, I know for a fact he says essentially that they're all from Earth, and a ship took them across the stars to escape the fire, referencing the nuclear holocaust, essentially. So, and Orlando seemed to be on the same page. So that leads me to believe that Eligius has something to do with the disciples.
I mean, Orlando literally says when he's, like, sitting there either praying or whatever, says, "Saved us from the fire that consumed the Earth." Right. So, like, I mean, it's they've got to be. I'm, like, really full on the Eligius.
Do you think that they wrote, like, when they say the word Earth, like, I guess, is the word Earth not capitalized, meaning, like, the ground, like, the dirt, the soil?
No.
Can't be a word without living on the planet Earth.
That is a great point, though.
And they also...
Because where would that word come from?
Gabriel was specifically saying that we're from Earth, like, saying... Because Gabriel was born on Earth. Like, he's lived
Well, I'm saying when he recites the prayer, is he... The word Earth he uses in the prayer.
He's referencing Earth because they have called themselves humankind before, and they wouldn't use the word human if they were from anywhere but Earth.
And so this ties back into what I brought up a couple episodes ago with the Second Dawn cult. And I think after watching this episode, not that I feel slightly better about that theory. I think we got closer to it than farther away from it. But so when Orlando's talking about the shepherd that came and saved us from the fire that destroyed the Earth, that sounds exactly like what the Second Dawn cult was built for. They were just trying to outlive the fire that destroyed the Earth and then rise from the ashes. So whether they got off before versus living underground in the bunkers after, that this could be a nice tie-in to throw it back to our guy Bill Godogan, who killed Becca Franco. And that also leads me to believe that there's a chance that the shepherd, who's this mythical, you know, godlike creature in the disciple society, could potentially have been Bill Cadogan and the people that were in the top tier, which the Second Dawn cult. And what makes me, last point on this, is what makes me further believe that is the levels directly, is the direct verbiage that the Second Dawn cult was using. So Orlando, our new friend on Beta, who's a level 12, that's like the top level, I believe, of the Second Dawn cult. It just, there's so many parallels there that if they make Bill Cadogan or, you know, somehow connect in the Second Dawn cult to the disciples' origin story, I'll be so fucking happy.
Yeah, I mean, I like it a lot. I'm really into it.
I got the tinfoil on with you, baby. Yeah. I love that. Yeah.
I think the only question that I have is, they went to Bardo, like the Eligius 3 mission left before they knew that the Earth was going to end.
But... Yeah.
So when Bill Cadogan was on Earth when Allegius 3 left.
Yeah.
That's
the only thing.
The way you can rationalize it also, though, is that what if there was the second Dawn cult, basically the equivalent of the Illuminati, who knew the top tier information on Earth? What if there was an anomaly stone on Earth and they knew about it? And right as, like, you know, Doomsday was happening, Allie was ready to nuke everything, this was the time to take the top of the second Dawn cult and use the anomaly stone and leave. And that would also explain why Barda would be more advanced, because they would have used the anomaly stone instead of the Allegius 3 to get to the planet. So they would have had hundreds and hundreds of years head start
themselves.
To start, you know, getting better technology, start getting the feel for what planets were around, aka Alpha. Like, they know all this stuff.
Would we have seen Earth through the helmet if that's true?
And they said one planet was offline.
That ain't bad.
Ooh, wow.
That ain't bad.
Oh, my God. Wow. How did I not think about that?
The one planet that's in the red and offline could
that's
have been
it.
Earth.
That's it. 100%. Yeah. What else would even make sense? Planet Gamma? Like, who the fuck cares? That's right.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
I mean, I like it. I'm in. I'm fucking down. I'm all about it.
Those are the six that are going to be, like, known as, like, you know, the interplanetary neighborhood. And
yeah.
I'm going to be bummed if it's not, because we're hype.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. But I hopefully it's just something cool.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see.
I can't believe that thought didn't even go through my head.
I mean,
amazing.
I also like how Raven echoes Gabriel when he says they can travel the universe with this, and then she is equally in awe that they can travel the universe with this.
I love
when
she says she's out of a job.
Yeah, and then back to the point I guess I made in the episode 2 recap of just it's sad that they're bringing that into the table on the last season.
I know.
Because the adventures are endless.
If Raven's brain was in Josephine's body in the beginning, and Gabriel and Raven got to live centuries together, they would have just took over the universe.
I mean,
just
Alpha would be better than
Bardo. The best couple.
Has anybody shipped them yet? Because we're going to start right now. Raven and Gabriel, it's
starting
right here.
I'm going to tell you that I think Josephine was probably just as smart as Raven, not to throw shade, but she's crazy bananas,
yeah,
though.
She's a crazy bitch, though.
Yeah, she's like a volatile.
Yeah, and I'm sure Josephine was moral in the first 100 or 200 years.
Until her dad just killed her.
Yeah.
So that was a fun tangent. We found out Luke is a Bill Cadogan stan. That was fun. But we're going to wrap up this beta plot line here. Hope and Echo get haircuts. It's a four and a half year time skip. They get haircuts. Hope reaches level 12 and the disciples come to retrieve Master Orlando.
That's a good point that you just said. Hope reaches level 12, because I was thinking they all reach level 12, but he does only say it to her because she was theoretically, at the start of training, was at a higher level than Gabriel and Echo, because she already has probably, you would assume, a level 7 level knowledge.
Honestly, I thought it was kind of, that scene felt weird both times I watched it, when Gabriel's like, no, Echo, you go. Like, it just felt like that felt off even, but I agree, I do think that just Hope is
I didn't think about it
Lee,
until
he
I
was
just
eating.
Heard you say it that way.
I know, but it just made it feel weird. Like, he's like, we got plenty of time. Like, I've just, that's just a weird thing. Like, just go next. What do you mean? Just go next. It's like, that's another weird line.
Yeah, it was a little bizarre. I agree, but he was eating, in his defense.
The other two, if that's just a throwaway line, I think that's weird. The other two, not to skip around, is when Clark says, they're mentioning the motorcycles, and she's like, Miller claims he knows how to ride, and then he's like, and then Raven's like, what? Riker taught me how to ride. And I'm like, who fucking cares who taught you how to ride?
Yeah,
like,
I didn't think about that line at all until you were, like, upset about it when we watched.
I'm not upset. I'm just saying, like, okay. Why? Is there a point?
I think they're just trying to just push that Miller is there. He's there.
Yeah,
I'm okay with that, though.
I really don't know.
Yeah. I mean, that's not something that if they're, like, riding motorcycles, I would ever go, who taught them how to ride motorcycles? I'm like, they've been there for a while.
Yeah, I didn't think about the line at all, because...
Anyway, sorry.
I wrote down, how the fuck can Miller ride? It was my first, like, watch through. I was like, I seriously wrote
Yeah, but they explained it.
Yeah, why? Why can he ride? They didn't.
Do you think you would have written that down if Clark didn't?
No, absolutely not. So, yeah, you're right. They shouldn't have put it in at all.
Oh, my God. I just, like, assume he's an able-bodied young man.
Producer Dave, feel free to cut this out.
Yeah. Fucking no. I was going to say, I'm trying so hard to, like, finish this part, and
anyway,
you guys are talking about motorcycles.
Let's get to Echo's...
It's their fault for putting the fucking line in.
What do we think about Echo? What do we think?
So, let's paint the picture. They knock all of the disciples that come for Orlando unconscious. Orlando is tied up. The plan is to let them all remain on Beta and live, but Echo goes around slitting throats and says, essentially, leave no survivors. They'll talk, they'll squeal. Does allow Orlando to live, cuts him loose, but Echo betrayed him, and she did all of this. That was definitely premeditated. She knew what she was doing. And the others only had like 2.5 minutes to react. And she says, Gabriel, you want to know all the answers. Hope, you need to go save Antio. And Dioza, we doing this, or are you guys going to get soft on me? And they all go through the anomaly. And Orlando's just there. Bummer, dude.
This is ice cold, baby. I still don't understand. Ice Nation cold. I don't understand why they killed all of the disciples and not Orlando. Because anything that those disciples could have known, Orlando also. Like, they let him cut himself out. They gave him a tool to cut himself out. He could have just put on a suit and bounced.
Yeah, that was my issue, was there was more people, more Bardo disciples that came there with suits than there were of them, obviously. So even if Echo, Gabriel, and Hope took three of the suits, there was at least one functioning helmet there. So when Orlando eventually, you know, cuts himself free, why doesn't he just pick it up and use the anomaly stone? Like, he's a level 12. He knows what anomaly stones are. He knows how to use these helmets. Maybe they tried. I don't know. There's nothing. Yeah. There's no answer to that.
I don't know what the original plan was that Gabriel and Hope were on board with to not kill them. Because what would they do with the knocked out bodies?
They were supposed to tie them up.
Okay.
To give them at least a head start.
Yeah. I know we talked about, yeah, I mean, the time dilation, even if it takes them 2 days to get out of it on Beta. It's whatever for them on Bardo.
He would pop up if he came, right? Whether it was, like you're saying, days, he's coming out on Bardo seconds behind.
Yeah. I agree. I don't get it.
Anyway, the three of them jump into the anomaly. You guys are getting so heated about these like small throwaway lines
I
like
want to know everything.
Yeah, exactly. Like it. Well, so it's just like went off the rails, but all of a sudden Echo's just like pulls out a knife and starts slitting throats and stabbing people.
True.
And it was like, holy fuck, what is going on?
She does save Hope's life, too, which they have a good moment.
Sweet
there.
Moment.
They're like
the other way around.
Now,
right?
I do really like that relationship between Echo and Hope. So anyway, I think that we can wrap up the Beta storyline, unless Luke,
I have
one
more. Yeah,
thought.
One more thing we kind of skipped over. I forgot to mention it is when Gabriel is talking to Orlando. This is when he does the false god speech. What he does say, he has a line. He says, we don't want to kill your people. We want to save ours. And what that to me means is that Gabriel officially thinks of himself as a collective with even like Clark and them. Because the only people that they're going to save are Dioza, Octavia, and Bellamy, none of which are children of Gabriel or anything. So like, so if he's starting to associate himself as part of our group, he's basically one crew at this point, right?
Yeah.
Like, and that's how he thinks of it in his head.
By association, so is the boss, Nelson.
Yeah,
I think
I love Nelson.
Yeah, the children of Gabriel as a whole definitely are part of one crew, which is funny because one crew is not even a part of one crew anymore.
I know.
Shit, yeah. And that speech, it's crazy. First time I watched it, I immediately texted you guys and was like, I think Gabriel is my new favorite character.
Yeah.
Like, solidified, 100%. Mm-hmm. He's top of the list now.
We are just welcoming so many people to the family in Season 7.
In
season
seven.
Come on, get over here, Gabriel. Hope, get
in
here.
And we're not usually like this. They're just writing these characters well.
Yeah,
like,
we're
just
normally a
no
new friends type gang, but, I mean, we'll take them all.
Yeah, fuck it.
I mean, we also are finding people to hate. I mean, you have the Jordans, the Trays.
The Nickies.
Oh, you're right.
The Trays.
God. All right, speaking of Jordan,
one more thing that we didn't mention either was there was a quick flash over the map drawing of Bardo and some just little things we picked up from seeing that image was we do get the outline of the stone room or the anomaly room. We see that the living quarters between all the people on Bardo are split up between the living quarters of level 1 to 6 and 7 to 12, which further solidifies the fact that we think everybody on planet Bardo is a level 1 to 12. We also see another portion of the map marked as the Cryolab Shepherd. I don't know what that's going to lead to, but that sounds important just because of all the talk of the Shepherd in their society. And then last, we get the circled cell block one, which we're just going to assume is where Bellamy or Octavia or Dioza is locked up.
Yep.
Cool. Now we good?
Yep, we're good.
Sweet. So let's bounce on over to Alpha. We do have some interactions between, you know, our Sanctum gang and the disciples on Alpha, which we haven't really seen too much of. So I believe the first time we see them is Clark and company, which would be Miller, Nyla, who else?
The rest of the gang.
They're essentially just observing this disciple suit. It has bullet holes, and someone comes in. I think it's just a random sanctumite that says, "We saw another disciple outside of the shield. He asked for Clark by name."
Classic. And here is Clark going to start running shit. Thank God. I do miss Clark. I will say that. So basically, Clark's immediately like, okay, I'll go. Fine. So then she goes to Raven.
Send Raven in.
And we see, like we knew Raven's kicking herself. She hates herself right now. And again, like we guess, Clark is like, it's fine. Don't worry about it.
Well, Clark's been there a million times before.
Your first time, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Raven gets fucking one-headed. We'll walk you right through it, baby girl. Don't worry.
Yeah.
We did talk about what this interaction was potentially going to be like in our last episode, and this was pretty tame for what I expected, honestly. Like, this is the time for them to kind of connect and on being a lever puller, being a decision maker, and they just
we'll get
they
more.
Did it pretty quick.
We're going to get more. It's only because Raven was needed. Like, she couldn't wallow because they needed
her
to
figure. As she always is for those little
She always steps up, too, though.
Yeah. I know.
Well, Kathleen, you said it was going to go about the way that it did. Like, Clark wasn't going to be a jerk. You made the joke where she was going to say, what do we have here, Raven?
You got to risk the few to save the many sometimes. Clark knows that all too well.
Why did it have to be Hatch, though?
I know. That's our boy.
I love Hatch.
Love you, Chad.
So Raven and Clark have that moment, and then we go to Clark having a back and forth with the bald disciple outside of the shield, who we will henceforth be known as Bald Disciple.
Fake Anders.
No. Fanders.
Yeah.
Fanders? Flanders?
Flanders.
Ooh, Flanders. I like that.
Okay, so the Bald Disciple, he's not going to be around too long, as we know.
He's dead.
So we'll call him.
That's
we'll,
so true.
We'll call him Flanders. We hated him. He was.
Corny douche.
Corny douche. We can just talk about this for hours, but let's keep talking about the episode. The disciples believe that Clark is the key to the last war mankind will ever wage. He just drops that knowledge bomb on Clark.
Nyla with a great little quip from the background of just, oh, that's it. Just ending the last war ever.
Right. And this is where an earlier conversation with Echo and Orlando comes in when Echo says, it must be hard working your whole life for something that may not come. So we know that the Great War hasn't happened yet, and for hundreds of years they've been training for it. So, I mean,
That's also why Orlando smashes the iPad when he says, "Let's, you know, like for like mankind, like for the fate of mankind, for whatever reason that the people on Alpha, the people from Sanctum, are going to do something bad."
We need to get to Bardo's stat.
Boy, I think you're going to love what the next episode's title is.
So, quick question that just made me think of. Does that mean that when Orlando smashed that iPad and he was talking to Gabriel, Gabriel was reasoning, like explaining to him about why they needed the iPad, they needed to use the Anomaly Stone. He, at the time, Orlando must have understood everything he was saying then. Nothing there, like it was calculated, because he knows about the Anomaly Stone.
At that time, he clearly wasn't in his right state of mind. Yes, he still had the knowledge, but he was not rationalizing things that I think he was in this episode, or at least not the same way. And also, I think his rationale was more that he committed a crime against Shepard's Law, and that was his major drive in smashing the iPad. If they fix this iPad,
They
could blame it on him, or they'll take me with him and I won't properly serve my punishment is passed down, it seems, from divinity.
Yeah. Okay.
So was there anything else that Flanders and Clark described?
He says he wants her to serve the shepherd. So whatever that means, like whatever that entails, that's the end goal. Yeah.
He was a little more forceful than want. He was basically told her to face, like, you're going to serve the shepherd.
Yeah.
This is also when he has that conversation we spoke about before with, talking about the time dilation of Clark's friends and the need for her to act quickly because time passes really quickly where your friends are. And that kind of led us into the conversation of who he was directly referring to. Obviously, when he's talking about the time dilation, he's specifically referring to Gabriel, Echo, and Hope. But at the same time, he's saying, like, we have all your friends. Could he also be referring to
Dioza, Octavia, Bellamy, all of them,
but
basically.
Clark, from her perspective,
she doesn't even know Hope.
She doesn't know Hope. She doesn't care about Gabriel. All she wants is Dioza and Octavia and Bellamy, right?
And Dioza.
And Echo.
Yes. Echo, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When all these people meet back up again, it's just going to be so great.
It's just gonna be an addict because I'm thoroughly enjoying this season. So yeah. When they get together, I'm gonna be fucking euphoric, baby.
I honestly think that this episode so far, while watching it the first time, had me more than the other episodes. I think it was my favorite episode on the initial watch through, without a doubt. A
lot of emotional stuff in it.
Yeah.
I had some issues with the end, and we're about to get to that. But,
right. So the next scene is Raven and Jordan are just kind of observing the Bardo suit. Raven finds out that it's thought-controlled, and she's kind of just exploring, you know, the
neighborhood of planets.
Exactly, yeah. It's very advanced technology, and they're just, like, kind of fangirling over it.
So she says something like, we have to tell Clark, and then it comes up as Juan Haida, considered armed and extremely dangerous. Right. So they know. So Raven now knows she has to go warn them.
Raven also, I guess you said it, but explicitly she says they're wormholes. Like, she finds out what the anomaly is and how the Bard or the disciples have been using it. It's a wormhole. So she immediately recognizes that.
And it says that they want her for rendition, which is essentially, I mean, they want to interrogate her. So I don't know if they see, they value what she knows more than they fear what she can do.
Yes. Okay. Because in the first episode, when we do see the visors from the people attacking Echo, Gabriel, and Hope when they're on Alpha, don't they mark Hope as kill on sight.
Yeah.
Which is important differentiation between what Clark is marked as. Yeah. So.
Next scene that we get from the Sanctumites is Clark going to Gabriel's old camp that is set up right outside the anomaly, as we know, to meet Flanders and his disciples.
Clark has a, like, badass classic Clark. She throws the gun up real quick. We've got Gaia, Nyla, all these people, Miller, all as backup. She throws the gun up. She's like, trust me, these things only work if you're willing to pull the trigger. And he's like, you're as smart as our intel, et cetera, et cetera. Then ghost mode, aka sicko mode, comes up. And now we're cornered. And then Raven somehow comes in and kills them all with one fucking shot, which is crazy. So Flanders mentions prior to that nine of his people are now dead because he is counting the people that Gabriel, Echo, and Hope originally killed before they entered the anomaly and went to Beta. And then the people they killed with Orlando, we get the information that Orlando now kills himself, and he has a note, allegedly kills himself, I'm going to say. So that was nine people, and then Raven just killed eight. So now there are 17 disciples dead, and that is not going to fare well for our homies.
Yeah, and I really, really hated the fact that Raven was able to take out all eight of those people in 3 seconds. Like, that kind of speaks to the point of, in the first episode, why couldn't the five invisible disciples that were there, they were attacking Echo, Hope, and Gabriel. I know they didn't want to kill anyone but Hope, but why couldn't they just instantly kill Hope?
I kind of thought it must have been something that since she was wearing a suit, she may have been able to, like, mess with their suits. I don't know. It looked like there was,
like,
a spark
off-screen her,
like,
tinkering with it very quickly to
wasn't time.
That's what I'm saying. Like, they're like, she did it within the span of however long it took them to fucking walk to Gabriel's camp.
I have to hope that's not the case, because then they're screwed. Like, the disciples, if they can just snap their fingers and knock out nine people, like, what possibility can they have if that's their firepower they're bringing to the table?
I mean, maybe something to do with that they're all wearing suits, so she shoots something electric or whatever, but they run on fucking brain power, so what is she gonna
do? And I'm gonna say, like, if I'm Raven and I have this now super suit, for say, call it, whatever, they just killed all eight. Everyone, suit the fuck up, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then they didn't.
Definitely. They didn't, yeah, of course.
They did
they
not.
Fucking didn't.
They should all be Nightbloods with super suits right now. That is where we should be.
They fucking should be.
But here we
get us in the writer's room.
Yeah, before we move on, though, I do want to say, though, I really liked the writing for Raven at the end of this episode, for the sole fact that she's not going to be emotionally crippled by what she did last episode. That's not going to be a plot point that I really thought she was just going to be, you know, mopey, miserable, not helpful.
I think we're going to get that, though.
But not to the level that's going to be annoying.
I mean, some more Hatch jump scares of his face popping up places.
Yeah,
I think that's
entirely
possible.
Yeah, I like I'm saying, like, there's going to be some ramifications of it going forward, but I don't think it's going to cripple her character.
Well, this is the second gray area thing that she's done in as many episodes, and I think she's leaning into the skid, and it could be a slippery slope for her, and if she continues like that, then we might finally get the breaking point for her, and I think that's where they're going with
it. Which, if you even told me that she was gonna, like, kill herself because of how her conscience was, like, in the end, if like you're saying, it keeps getting more and more where Raven's making the harsh decisions, like, that could be, like, a tragic ending and, you know,
no,
unexpected.
I refuse.
Yeah. Fuck that shit.
Yeah,
I know what you're saying, though.
Yeah.
Well, she said, Jordan says, like, good job, Raven, and she says, killed eight people. There's nothing okay about that, Jordan.
Yeah.
Jordan's on the squad for once. He's like, great job.
Yeah.
No.
Get the fuck out of here.
Jordan.
He already released Shade Hata on Murphy and stuff, so now
he never knows what to say.
Yeah.
Honestly,
it's
now
too late.
That you just said the suicide thing, possible reason. I mean, she can fix any machine, anything with her hands, but the only thing she can't fix, tragically, is her own mind.
Ooh.
Or her leg.
That is poetic.
Oh, I didn't say that. I said poetic. You said her leg.
Her leg. Oh, I guess true. Yeah, she couldn't fix her fucking leg.
Wasn't
going
to not high five you, though.
Okay. I did leg poetic.
All right, let's wrap it up. So where do we end with the anomaly stone?
Well, we fast forward to them. It got a little weird for me. They started just making wildly irrational assumptions and decisions,
which I thought was
just not...
Like,
as
Raven
smart.
Has the helmet, but they don't know anything about
they don't
what
know
they're getting
anything.
Into.
Anything. And essentially, Raven says, looks like there's four planets that we can jump to from this anomaly stone. And Clark...
Because one is Alpha and one's offline Earth.
Correct. And Clark says, let's try them all. And Nyla, the voice of reason, says, what if it's not survivable there? What if we go and it's like carbon monoxide in the atmosphere? Clark says, we're going.
That's
his
fucking
rationale, which I guess that's where we're at. Like, they really want to do this, but it seemed like they found out about this wormhole and they didn't even plan. They next step was going through it.
Didn't think about Murphy and Amori that they're just kind of ditching behind.
Too true.
Fucking Jackson Miller just leaves him. Fuck
that's
it, we're going.
True. Yeah.
Yeah.
They gave him dialogue. He could have at least had a little.
Well, Gaia
throwaway.
Was supposed to go like kind of tell everybody,
that's
and then
true
she
too.
Got bopped.
Yeah. I mean, does Miller ever say like, hey, you know, give Jackson my love or whatever?
He's
just
he's
like,
so mad about
that
doctor comment from a couple
true.
Episodes.
I mean, I guess they were a little bit on a rocky point.
Oh, we did skip past the suicide note.
No, I said it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Alleged death of Orlando. We're talking about
Orlando
the alleged.
Suicide note.
We also, I mean. Obviously, they have the note now. Did they ever read it? No. They said, fuck it, let's go to another planet.
True.
It's like, oh, she wants the note. She gets the note. They don't even read
She's
it.
She's like,
they
I don't even want any more ill.
Yeah, they just said, fuck it, let's just jump
he
through
He was
this
annoying.
Wormhole.
That's like Josephine version of Clark, just being like, ew, no, bye. Anyway.
That scene got so weird. I didn't like how they were
I didn't
just
like
jumping
it.
Through.
Like, the whole
whatever.
Episode was good until that point. I was like, this just didn't... It just didn't make sense. Like, the characters were acting irrational. They weren't thinking things through at all. Yeah, and
the only one who has an excuse to act irrational is Raven, because she now just killed more people, and she's like, oh, fuck, like, that sucked. But everyone else has seen so many fucking people die that it would never faze them.
So they go through the anomaly. They end up on the ice planet Hoth, and Clark's like, I'm over this. Let's go to the next one. And Raven's like, well, shit, we need another stone now, Clark. You didn't think about anything. You just fucking jumped through this thing.
Why do they, like, why do they not forget their memories? Like, why were they able to go through the anomaly without the helmets on when they made that a specific plot point in multiple episodes? How are they going to explain that away?
We got to finish this before we start throwing hands.
Yeah,
like,
true,
honestly.
True.
Another one, too. If they have anything that's bigger than an iPad, it should not have made it through the anomaly.
All right.
They come out with the guns? I didn't even fucking notice.
They specifically... Echo didn't on beta,
but, like,
so they could...
Did Miller and Nyla come through with the guns?
I didn't see yet, but we're
going to
find
notice.
Out, and I'm going to be fucking pissed.
Also, I know it was a joke, but the name of the planet is actually Nakara.
Is it?
They do name it, yeah. Nakara.
Okay.
So
Nakara.
They
but
walk
I like,
in.
I like the Star Wars.
They
joke,
walk
though.
Into the anomaly at all different times, which is also annoying. But all come through at the same time.
Yep.
Gaia gets bopped to death and then thrown in with whoever is in that ghost mode, sicko mode suit.
Before we jump to that, though, what you're saying, like the gap between them walking in. So if they picked right, they had a 25% chance of hitting beta.
True.
If they picked right. The gap between them walking in would have been months. Clark would have been there for over a year by the time whoever walks in last
Jordan
gets there.
Was last.
So honestly, and they're probably just lucky that they picked wrong and that this planet that they are on is on the same time relativity as Planet Alpha.
And the other thing I picked up on was that when Gaia got tackled by the guy in the Bardo suit, she did not go to the same planet. So we don't know where Gaia and that person is.
That person, yeah. Which do we want to talk about?
I mean, it's less. I'm just going off the still talking about the different intervals they walked in. I mean, to their credit, they don't fucking know that.
They don't know that, but what are the chances that it's on the same time scale? Because we've been shown that the seconds matter when you're walking.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's just a little subtle way to confirm that it's on the same.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. That it has to be, or I'm pissed.
Too true.
It is.
It is. Yeah. Which also makes it on the same relative time scale as Bardo. So Bardo, Alpha, and this planet that Clark is on is all the same time all scale. Right.
Do we have any last thoughts about the episode content?
No.
No, I mean, I've already said, yeah, Gabriel's my favorite character.
Fantastic. Kathleen.
My favorite segment, Bang, Kill, Marry. This is a hot boy segment. We're going with Gabriel, Bellamy, and the new Dev. I'll kick it off. I am going to kill Dev, unfortunately. And then I'm going to bang Gabriel because he's been here a long time. He knows his way around. And then I'm going to marry Bellamy because he's the best.
I'm going to marry Gabriel. The dude smiles when he learns things. He's like, oh, this is awesome. Like, he's the smart guy. I don't know. He'll treat you right. You know, he seems like a good partner. I'll kill Dev. We just don't know him enough. He had potential for sure. But, I mean, our boy Bellamy's been with us for 7 seasons. You can't at least bang him. So I'll bang him. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, I'm going to mimic the same exact answer. I don't have much else to say. Gabriel is the choice. He's the coolest. I love my boy Bellamy, but I have to marry Gabriel. I'm going to follow him.
Yeah, I mean, Dev's fighting an uphill battle in this scenario.
Too true. I should have kept him as Murphy.
Yeah, it's a little tough for Dev, so sorry. He's going to die again. And then, yeah, I'll bang Bellamy, and I have to marry Gabriel because I love Gabriel.
Man of science.
Sweet. So that does it for Bang, Kill, Marry and the episode. As always, we're going to be following season 7 of The 100 Weekly with a podcast after every episode. Next up is episode 5 titled Welcome to Bardo. Wonder what's going to happen there. Also, be sure to check out our exclusive interview with Chad Rook, the actor who played fan favorite Hatch. He was such a cool guy, and we had a blast talking to him about his time on The 100 and some of his other projects, so be sure to check that out. And a special thanks to Matt of the Horror Movie Night podcast, who helped produce that episode. Again, that is the Horror Movie Night podcast. Be sure to check that out. If you like what you heard, give Bingetown TV a follow on Twitter and Instagram, and subscribe to our show on Spotify and the Apple Podcast app. Once again, we are Bingetown TV, and thanks for listening.